You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Locked On Suns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm joined by co-host Brendan Kleen, and you can follow me on Twitter at EastSider. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanKleen14. We're joining you today after the Suns won once again. They've won five of their last seven games. They won this time at Sacramento. Devin Booker, Marquise Chris, and TJ Warren were the three standouts to me. But what was your reaction from last night's game, Brendan?
Definitely Marquise Chris. I think kind of hard to pick anyone else for me. More of the same, I think, from Booker and Warren. Booker's not quite back up to the efficiency level he was at prior to the injury, I don't think. Warren just kind of did his typical thing. So Chris, to me, definitely stood out. And I actually wanted to read a tweet just because I think a lot of Suns fans can get discouraged with the way the national media covers the Suns or kind of just doesn't at all a lot of the time. But Zach Lowe, like probably the most famous NBA writer, said, "I've been critical of Marquise Chris's feel before, as have lots of others, including coaches. Last night was maybe the best all-around game I've seen him play. Positive signs across the board." And, you know, I get notifications from him, so I kind of woke up to that tweet this morning, and I was like, wow, that feels really good to just, you know, have someone notice the progress, especially if someone who's been so frustrating like Marquise has for a lot of the past 2 years, to be honest.
Yeah, Marquise last night put up in only 28 minutes. He had 14 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, and a steal and a block as well, and he did awesome defense on Zach Randolph in that first half. I think he was 0 for 3, had 2 points maybe from the free throw line there, so what was your reaction as far as Marquise's defense goes? Because I feel like that's really where he's starting to take his stance and really where his energy, like he said on the post-game interview last night, his energy is starting to translate to both ends of the floor.
Yeah, what's crazy to me is it's kind of like the almost a really symbolic performance for him too. Not only, you know, it showing up in the stat sheet and to all the fans watching. I mean, Zebo shot less than 50% from the field and really didn't have a big impact on the game like he has, honestly, a lot of this season for Sacramento. And the reason it's so symbolic in my mind is that I think he did exactly the kinds of things we've been so impressed with. You know, I think the physicality and kind of just holding his own physically has been the biggest step forward for him, and also doing so without fouling has been the biggest step statistically. But, you know, you just see him look stronger out there game to game. And so to match up against somebody like Randolph, who's, you know, even though he's getting up there in age, still one of the just strongest, like, bulldog type power forward center guys that there are in the league, especially on the offensive end. So to see him, you know, there were plays where Randolph would have the ball in the post, and, you know, the best post scorers kind of use their elbows and shoulders a little bit, kind of foul maybe more often than they get called for. And Randolph was trying all that stuff against Chris, and he was just holding his ground pretty much every possession. So that was just really, really good to see.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's probably an easy question to answer, but do you think this is the best two-game stretch we've seen out of Marquise Chris in his career? Because, I mean, I think it obviously is.
Yeah, there's just the two-end play, the all-around performance, I think for sure, yeah.
Yeah, and adding on to that real quick, we saw Dragan Bender have his moments as well, but like we saw last night, it was really Marquise Chris's time to shine. He had 28 minutes, and he was very active on both ends of the floor, and as you saw with the Zach Lowe tweet there, he's starting to finally get some attention. And as we know, Marquise is only 20 years old too. He's only been playing basketball for, I think five or six years now, so he's still a project, and it's going to be pretty fun to see how he develops over the future. But let's touch really quick on Devin Booker as well, as we always do, but he had another 25-plus point game. It's his 13th game of 25-plus points this season. Had a plus-minus of +5, and he had probably his worst shooting game of the season. I mean, yet, as a great scorer he is, he had still finished with 26 points.
Yeah, he two big buckets that I think should be highlighted for him late in the game last night. He drives to the rim kind of right after the Suns give up the lead that they had most of the game. They give it up right around, I don't know, maybe 3-4 minutes, and then soon after, Booker drives to the hoop and has this really crazy angle layup over Willie Cauley-Stein that touches above the box on the glass and just drops right in. And then the big one I think most people will remember is just that pull-up dagger that put him up 11 right as the game was kind of closing out, that really just ended any hope that Sacramento had. And so it's really good to see that even though he didn't start the game super efficiently, didn't have his best playmaking night, at least, you know, statistically notching those assists. But the fact that he was able to really come through, make shots when it counted, and difficult ones too, you know, that was the biggest thing for me that, you know, to kind of take away going into the future.
Now, one thing I want to touch on as well was what Jay Triano he did in the last 4 or 5 minutes of the game. I called for it a few podcasts ago when Troy Daniels was on his hot streak. Once Booker came back, I wanted to see him play a little point guard and have that floor spacer alongside him and Troy Daniels. In that last 4 minutes, we got to see that in action a lot, and it really helped Booker space the floor. He had a lot of easy driving lanes. Daniels helped space the floor. He was still making those tough sniper-like shots from the corners, as he always has on these past few weeks. But what was your thoughts on that lineup today that Triano pulled out at the end?
I think it's going to be something we see more and more of, especially as Tyler Ulis continues to struggle. He kind of started, he made a floater and a three-pointer, I think, both in the first quarter, and didn't score the rest of the game. So if he continues to struggle that way, I think Isaiah Cannon actually had a really nice night, kind of helped the Suns be effective in transition, which I think they hadn't been as good in that area for the past few nights. And so to have him kind of re-inject them that way, Warren got a lot of his buckets in transition. So I don't think Cannon necessarily struggled, but at, you know, at the same time, Daniels has been so good and Booker's obviously been so great this year that it really just, you know, comes down to those are probably the two most talented guards you have, and getting them on the court at the same time is almost just as important competitively as any developmental stuff that you're getting out of putting the ball in Booker's hands. I think at this point, that's where my mindset is with it, is it genuinely might be the best option they have when the guard rotation kind of plays out. So,
yeah, I mean, to that point, I mean, we're seeing Devin Booker take steps forward in his playmaking ability. You saw him make a couple lob plays last night at Tyson Chandler and Marquise Chris at times. Yeah, I think he finished with 3 assists, but it's another solid performance we've seen out of Devin Booker on all ends. But let's touch in real quick on TJ Warren. He had another 25-point game, as we mentioned. Finished with 26-10, which is his 5th double-double of the season. And when he scores over 25, they are now 8-0 when he does so. And another thing on Warren, he played a lot with the second unit last night, and he did really well with the guys like Dragan Bender, Alex Lynn, Isaiah Cannon, and Troy Daniels. So what was your overall thoughts on Warren's performance last night?
I like how you snuck that in just to kind of convince people that he should be off the bench a little bit more. I thought he did, I mean, just like I said at the beginning, pretty much is kind of what we've come to expect from him. I just don't get surprised by it anymore, and that's no offense to him or anything like that. I think he's just become such a consistent player, and I think one thing we did see, even though he didn't necessarily wow anyone without Booker in the lineup for those few games, I think we did see that even on off nights, he didn't lose confidence or concentration and just put up a really, he didn't have any just truly ugly performances where he stopped shooting or, you know, fouled or any of that type of stuff that younger players tend to get into when their shot's not going down. I think we've really just seen the maturation of Warren this year, and not that, you know, not to take too big a takeaway from this one game. I just think the more and more games consecutively that we see him doing this, it's kind of harder to ignore it. And then the other thing quickly too to touch on is his offensive rebounding is just crazy. Mm-hmm. He had 4 last night, and I just don't think it goes noticed enough how uncommon it is for somebody as not small, but you know, a wing to do what he does. And so he's in the 97th percentile as an offensive rebounder off of field goal attempts, according to Cleaning the Glass. And he's been right at the very top of the league all year long. So part of that is because they classify him as a wing this year compared to the last 3 seasons. He was classified as a forward where he didn't rank as high percentile-wise. But as far as the total percentage of shots that he's rebounding that the Suns take, he's right around where he's always been and taking advantage of those extra minutes and opportunities and really finishing well around the rim when he gets them. So just those two, consistency and the offensive rebounding.
What was really good to see with, I'll touch on again the second unit with Warren, was that when you had spacers like Daniels and Dragan Bender and even Isaiah Cannon out there for him, it seemed like when he was the number one option around those guys, the secondary pieces, he seemed to thrive off that. If they want to do that more often, I feel like that's a really good idea if they want to get TJ going early, and he did so last night with that lineup.
Yeah, and it lets him be more creative, because I think we have seen that, I don't really really think there's too many concerns at this point with how the lineups currently go that Booker and Warren can't coexist. I don't think it's a problem like some teams have where the two scorers really, really get in one another's way. I think they play off each other well. They, especially when they can get the ball or get the pace up and really, really run, that's when I think when those two are on the court, the Suns' best style is to just really push the pace, and they've learned how to play off of one another in that way really well. But I think at the same time, just like any dominant scorers, they're going to have a lot of success playing as the only guy. So it allows Triano to kind of mess with that a little bit more when he has so many shooters and passers in that second unit. And I do think the passing is one thing. We talk about it a lot, but that really helps him too, because he is still a player who does really well when others are setting the table for him. There's that play where he comes off that screen around the free throw line. They run it constantly, and he makes them ton of the time. So I think it's just a really good infrastructure for him on that second unit to really just kind of maximize his skill set.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if they were to run him a lot more often with the second unit, I feel like he could easily be what he's doing now, averaging around 18 to 20 points per game consistently. And then another stat to notice, like we've mentioned it, they're undefeated when TJ Warren scores 25 or more points. Just speaking on Devin Booker himself and having a guy that can co-star around him, like an average at least 20 points a game, with that number, with TJ Warren, with them being undefeated, just what does that speak on about, like, if Booker gets help, it seems like this team always wins.
Yeah, it's probably like the sneakily one of the more important stats of the whole season for the Suns, and credit to you, you've been on it early. I didn't even realize it until maybe like four or five of these wins ago when he had these 25-point games where he's just been kind of the key cog for them. And so, and it's crazy too that they were even able to keep that up when Booker was out, that whenever he scored 25 or more, even during those nine games, they still were able to win. So he's important to the team. And I think overall, like the point I made about the transition scoring, I do think when he's at his best is when the team is playing faster. And I think the team overall benefits from playing faster. So I think when he's able to get going, it's for the same reasons that the Suns overall, to kind of be efficient offensively. I just think that's where they're most comfortable with how many young guys they have and how many kind of formless players, not in an insulting way, but Jackson, Bender, Chris, those guys all kind of do well when there's less structure, it seems like, a lot of the time. So I don't know. Overall, I think he just kind of moves things along for them in a helpful way.
Yeah, I think without Warren's performance last night, those first three quarters he carried them, and when TJ went cold, that's when Booker went hot. So it was almost perfect time for the Suns to pull out that win late like they did. But another quick stat I want to bring up as well related to Jay Triano and Booker himself is that the Suns are 10-4, and they have a plus 43-point differential under Jay Triano when Devin Booker plays in games decided by 10 points or less so far this season. That really speaks to not only Booker, but Jay Triano himself. I mean, the coaching job we've spoken on a ton on this podcast, he's done a great job to help ride that ship that was the 0-3 start and two multiple 40-plus point losses. So, and another stat to look up is that over the last 10 or so games, the last 2 weeks, the Suns are 16th in defensive rating. So what's that all say about Triano and the effect he's having on these players?
The defense is just, they just work hard. You know what I mean? I try to watch for specific things systematically, or really just overall big arching things that I think are changing the Suns as a defense. And I think we've seen a complete sea change since Watson left, but I don't think they're doing anything revolutionary. You know what I mean? These guys just try their best to get in position. They know their role. I think guys like Marquese Chris and Devin Booker are really just understanding what they're being asked to do possession to possession has been transformational for them. I think Booker, I still just don't think he's as bad as people like to say. I think when young players are really good at scoring, there's just an assumption that they also must not be great at defense. But I think you see him just on smaller plays, like he's contesting shooters any time that they're near him, even when the play looks to be over and the guy's gotten a wide open shot. Booker at least hustles out to contest. He's moving out on screens more often and just working harder on that end, and I think that's made an impact. Even if he does get beaten a lot of the time, then that can be frustrating. But I think overall, just the role clarity and just having people do things that they're good at has been what I credit most to Triana.
Now, another weird thing to point out, I mean, I didn't think this would be where we are going to the 2018, but the Suns are 10th in the Western Conference right now, and they have a chance to be 9th in the Western Conference if they take care of business against the Sixers, the Hawks, and the Nuggets. So what's that say about Triana? I mean, honestly, we know the schedule is going to be pretty easy going into 2018. I mean, this was possible even without Devin Booker or without Eric Bledsoe, excuse me. But I think it's pretty surprising to me so far how Triana has ridden the ship so far and had these guys, even though not against the greatest schedule, still picking up consistent quality wins.
Yeah, they're winning games, which is the most impressive part. I think the standings are maybe a little bit deceiving just because the West, they were kind of lingering around this point last year. Remember, there was some kind of discussion on the internet about, like, should the Suns really try to trade these veteran players, and then they only ended up trading PJ Tucker, but or should they really make a run for the playoffs, as if that really was a possibility for them. They didn't have the talent to make the playoffs last year, and I don't think they do now. I just think the West has struggled again this year in the back half with teams like New Orleans and others not living up to expectations. So I think that it looks really good, but I don't know if the standings are necessarily the big thing to like. I think really the fact 14 wins, that's, I think, more than most people would have assumed that they would have at this point in the year.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I only predicted about 20, I think it was 24 wins initially. I think they were probably going to go over 30 at this point to keep it up. But looking at their seven-game stretch they have, like we said, the Sixers and the Hawks at home, then at Denver. Then they play at San Antonio, home against Oklahoma City, and home against Houston. And then for Brightside night, it'll be at home against the Pacers. So let's say the Suns are competitive over that stretch. Let's say they actually win the next three straight games, and they actually maybe sneak in a game or two against the Spurs, Thunder, Rockets, or Pacers. So let's say they have a plus 500 record over that stretch. If you're Ryan McDonough and you see Devin Booker's taking this all-star leap already, do you want to make a push for the playoffs if they have some sort of stretch over the next couple weeks where it's like, wow, this team's actually way better than we thought we would be?
I still think I tend to agree with, we had kind of a little debate about this after the conversation you had on Twitter with Brian Gibberman, who works for Arizona Sports, and I think I tend to still kind of side with what he was making the case for, which is there's enough elite talent in this draft that can really change a franchise, that the Suns would probably still benefit from finding a way to get high in this draft and having one more guy to kind of see what he can do and where this team can go with just that one more potentially really elite talent piece. And I think that's still at this point in their kind of building process more important than a playoff run, because I think that they're still really far away. They would have to be really major buyers at the deadline to make that happen. And I just think that's too far of a deviation from their plan, even with what Booker's been able to do. It doesn't make sense quite yet.
Yeah, I mean, segueing real quick to the draft part, I mean, if the Suns do not finish in the top three, which is looking really possible with how they're playing so far, if they finish from, like, say, 4-6 or 4-7, one guy that really stood out to me last night, I got a chance to watch for the first time almost exclusively outside of the game he had against Marvin Bagley early in the season, was Mo Bamba from Texas. He had an absolutely dominant performance. He had a career-high 22 points, recorded 8 block shots and 11 rebounds, nearly a triple-double, and with a 7'9" wingspan. I mean, he was changing almost every single shot that Kansas was trying to do at the rim. So, and I mentioned on Twitter last night as well, if they want to build a team around Booker, I mean, Bamba's one of the premier guys you want to put around as far as rim protection and defense goes, right?
Yeah, he's a really elite defender. I think it's kind of hard to argue that he's going to be anything less than above average as a defender, even in the NBA, because at first I think my impression of him was that he was a typical, you know, we see a lot of like frail guys who just have the crazy length to block a lot of shots, and you don't necessarily know what's going to happen with them long term and what they'll be able to do outside of just the eye-popping block numbers. But his frame is already, you know, against Bagley, I think he could have done better, but it wasn't as if he was being taken advantage of. And Bagley's and Wendell Carter too, when he was posting Bamba up, I don't think that he was embarrassed by those guys like you maybe could have been in a worse situation. And so more and more, I just feel like he's so versatile and has so much potential on that end. I watched him, went back and watched the game that he had against Alabama and Colin Sexton, and he's switching out on guards and doing it like effectively, not just trying. He really is swallowing up smaller players, has the footwork and quickness to move with them, at least able enough to make them kind of think twice when they're putting up shots. And his wingspan, just guys don't know what to do. So yeah, he's really, really been impressive with me.
Yeah, real quick, we can talk about the bigs in this class real quick with Mohamed Bamba, Marvin Bagley, and DeAndre Ayton. We were texting about before we went on the air, but I know Marvin Bagley's had a really awesome season so far, but after seeing him a lot and then seeing Bamba have these performances consistently, seeing Ayton have these consistent performances consistently, I feel like Bagley might be the guy in this draft class that actually slips a little bit. Is that the same read you're getting?
I think, yes, that's been my kind of view on him, is I just worry about an actual skill that he has that's elite at this point. I think he has athleticism that's far and away, maybe could even be argued that it's the best in this class, but that's not a skill. That's something that allows you to make your skills work for you better. And so if he doesn't have something he can rely on, I saw somebody on Twitter saying he needs a go-to move. I don't really think that people who don't play in the post need to go to move necessarily. I just think he needs something, some sort of role that he can lean into when he gets to the NBA, because we see a lot of guys that are just so active and athletic that they can be decent or above average at a lot of things, and then they get to the NBA and it's can be a struggle for them to kind of carve out what they're going to be as a player. And that's where I am with him, is I'm just looking for something that I feel like he's just going to be dominant at, and I'm afraid that I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, in regards to Marvin Bagley, I feel like his athleticism is probably his elite trait, alongside his offensive rebounding and his total rebounding numbers for a wing, almost forward type. But like you said, we've seen these freaky moments from Bob. I mean, last night I saw him switch off on a guard from the perimeter, trail behind him, and then go about his, I think his hand went almost near the top of the backboard and swatted away a layup that was probably going to go in from about 10 feet away, but somehow his arms reached up and got it. So he has those freaky impact plays on defense. I feel like he'd be almost a perfect fit with the Suns. And if I was going to say at this point what my preference would be, I think
Bamba's probably for me. I think he's above Bagley at this point, above Jaren Jackson. And I think he's still a ways away from being where Ayton is to me, just because I think Ayton is more elite as an offensive player at this point than Bamba is as a defensive player. Although, you know, the case could be made that at this point in where the league is, that having an elite defender can be more important than having an elite offensive player. So it wouldn't surprise me even if eventually we look back in their NBA careers and wonder about, you know, kind of thinking about how that difference between offense and defense kind of played out for each of them. But Bamba, you know, my impressions of his defense shouldn't discount his offense, because I think he's further along than a lot of defense coach guys are in college too.
No, yeah, he was showing off his perimeter abilities last night. I think he had drained 2 threes, and his shooting form looks pretty good from the outside already. So if he gets with an NBA training staff and a coaching staff that will let him take some shots from out there, I think it's pretty promising. He's going to be a pretty good impact player rather fast in the NBA. But another prospect I wanted to touch on, I mean, if I wanted to, real quick on Bamba though, I think my preference, you can hear me on this, is just a hypothetical, but even though TJ Warren's been awesome this season, let's say he is the main trade piece this offseason for the Suns to get a veteran name. If they get Bamba somehow at 4 or 5, and you can trade maybe the 2018 Miami first plus the 2021 Miami first and like TJ Warren or something to Charlotte with Kemba Walker, I know we talked about on the podcast previously about them, Booker and Walker, as a defensive fit together, but if you have a guy like Bamba with them, I mean, does that almost clear it out for you?
Yeah, I think we're in agreement as far as having, I think I want to come out of the offseason with, I don't know if this will be the summer that they get that veteran, but I do think that eventually the long-term answer is having, flipping some of the assets for an established star type of player and having another piece or two grow out of the draft. That could also mean that one of the players they already have turns into something we haven't seen from them yet, Josh Jackson or Dragan Bender, and then maybe the star comes with the assets more quickly if those guys show something over the last half of this year. I think more likely, though, is that, yeah, like you're saying, they probably get one of these elite guys at the top of this draft and then make the move for the veteran at a different point. I don't know. I still don't think I'm sold on Kemba just because of his age again, but you could do worse. I'm just afraid that if that's the team, because that would kind of be the locked-in team at that point, I don't know if that's a competitive, like, championship contender in a few years. Because what, Kemba would be 30 at that point, and you're still looking at Bamba, Chris, and Bender not really knowing if they'll, any of them will really become, like, great starters, you know? I just worry that they still need a lot of talent, and I don't know if Kemba and, like, somebody like Mo Bamba is enough talent to bridge the gap from where they are and where they eventually want to be.
Maybe a final point here on the draft, because I spoke my hypothetical, what I would do. What would you do in this scenario if you're McDonough? I mean, what prospect would you want to get, and what veteran would you want to trade with and really cap off this team?
Yeah. I like a lot of the point guards in this draft as pairs for Booker. So I'm almost, you know, if they do continue to win, maybe not at this clip of, you know, 5 of 7 games when the schedule will get a little bit harder over the next month, they'll probably kind of sink back down to where we expected them to be. But maybe they've already accumulated so many wins now in this first half of the year that they can't get the first overall pick or close to that. Maybe they do sink a little bit down in the middle of the lottery, and they maybe look a little harder at those point guards rather than the wings and bigs at the very top. Maybe if they can get one of those, and then I just think maybe that there's a better market for trading for elite big men with the talent that they have than a point guard. I just feel like over the past few years, more big men have become available, but I might be completely off there. I just, I don't know, maybe like they had interest, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge, Paul Millsap, Blake Griffin, those are the names we've heard them be interested in as well. And so I feel like that's what they've leaned. Not that it's gone anywhere, so maybe trusting their judgment isn't the right call either, but that's kind of where I see, because I really like how these point guards could potentially fit with Booker on a really up-tempo team. I see a lot of potential there with how this team's already playing and how a lot of those point guards like to play.
Yeah, I mean, a name that could pop up there is Trae Young. We'll probably get into him in another episode, but I think with what you're saying, I think Trae Young would probably be a really good fit with this roster if you wanted to add another point guard via the draft. But Another real quick topic let's discuss real quick is the game tomorrow, which is the Suns and Sixers. Me and Bern will both be there for Brightest Side of the Sun. Joel Embiid sat out last night, the first night of back-to-back, and they're going to have him full go tomorrow against the Suns. So don't worry about that DFS player. So he'll be playing against the Suns. But what's your overall thoughts on the game tomorrow? Because I feel like it's going to be a tough game. And really, like I said before the podcast started, it's going to have to be another night where Booker probably scores between 35, 40 points from the win.
I agree. I think, and he's going to have a tough assignment with J.J. Redick, and they have a pretty good stable of wing defenders. Covington's going to be defending T.J. Warren, so I just think that they're so all around. They have players at every position that are going to challenge the Suns, and I think that's sort of when we've seen the Suns struggle is if they can probably handle teams who have a scorer or two, like the Wolves, I think, are a good example, where they're kind of top-heavy and don't have the depth that the Suns have, and so they've had success against them when they can get out to a lead or kind of handle their offensive stars defensively. So I just think the Sixers have 6 or 7 guys that I'm afraid of, and that's why I worry about the game.
Yeah, I pretty much have the same sentiment as you, but I feel like, honestly, with the way the Suns team is playing, I like their chances tomorrow, to be honest. I mean, that's kind of going on a limb and saying Ben Simmons has another subpar performance like it did against the Suns the first time around. But with the way this team's playing, I like how their momentum's going to carry over. But I guess we'll have to see on that Sunday, because it's going to be a pretty fun one on New Year's Eve. It's an early start time, 6 o'clock, so it'll be at Talking Stick Resort Arena. Me and Brent will both be there for Bright Side of the Sun, as mentioned. But one final topic we're going to mention, I think in 2 weeks, the deadline is in about less than 48 hours before you hear this podcast, is Bright Side Night. It's a yearly tradition we're doing on the website, and it's the first year that I've been a part of it. But Dave King, he's been doing it the past 3 years. This is the third annual Brightside Night. The record previously was 1,200 tickets. They've already gone over 1,500 tickets, and the new goal is 2,000 before this expires in about 40 hours or so. So real quick on the comments, I mean, it's pretty awesome to see Dave and them do this. It's been a yearly thing, and now that's growing even bigger. it's going pretty nationwide so far. And hopefully if they get around 2,000, it might make some pretty big waves in the news. So that'd be pretty awesome to see. But what's your overall thoughts on the Brights that night and what it really does for the kids, Brennan?
Yeah, it's a really cool opportunity. I wasn't able to go last year. I don't remember why. I feel terrible that I didn't, and I can't even remember. But I mean, I bought tickets last year for a few tickets for the donation, and I just think, yeah, that especially in this area, there's a lot of children's programs where these kids get to go do cool things that they wouldn't have been able to otherwise. And I think us getting involved with it and really the support from a lot of people across SB Nation, Whitney Medworth, and even locally John Gambadoro using his crazy Twitter following to get the word out there has been awesome. And I've actually been even more excited the fact that a few other SB Nation NBA blogs, team blogs, have joined in. I think Peachtree Hoops did it last year, and the Nuggets site, I think, did something similar earlier this season. So it's just been really awesome to see. It's such an easy way to, like, you know, giving a kid an opportunity to see a basketball game could really just spark something in them, or even if it's just a really cool experience that they have that they remember forever is cool. I mean, we all remember, like, the very first time we saw some sort of sports game that, you know, we went with our friends and had a cool time. Like, everybody remembers that. So being able to give somebody that kind of memory is just, you know, the least we can do around this, especially around this time of year.
Oh, for sure. I mean, with the holiday season, it's only $9. If you haven't known, it's $9 to give a ticket right now. It used to be $18 about a month ago. But with the price drop, that should be really easy around the holiday season for you guys. If you donate $9 to Suns or NBA.com/Suns/Brightside, you'll donate one ticket to a child in need. If you donate 10 tickets, you get a lower level bowl ticket. And if you donate 25, you get to meet Vice President of Basketball Operations James Jones when Dave and I will be talking to him pregame. So that'll be an exclusive press conference interview type. So that'll be really fun for anyone that wants to join in on that. But once again, we'll probably pump that out tomorrow as well. I mean, we want to get this to almost 2,000 tickets for Brightside Night. It's the best so far we've done, and we'll make it even better. So it'd be really awesome if you guys donated. But until then, we'll talk to you guys after the Sun Sixer game tomorrow, and probably if you're down, Brennan, let's do it at the Talking Stick Resort Arena. Are you down?
For sure.
Alrighty, guys, we'll see you then.